If he does.
I want a new classification. But I have to prove myself first.
Hazardous duty pay.
That's right.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting for Tuesday, March 22nd. The Council just adjourned from closed session where we discussed labor issues, and we have no report at this time. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Dickens.
Here.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Here.
Councilmember Arnold is absent tonight. Mayor Pro Tem Costello.
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Here. Next on the agenda is our flag salute, and American Legion Post 136 is here. Mr. Evanson. And if you would remain standing, Pastor Robert Banker is here to do our invocation.
Please uncover. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Shall we pray? Our Father, we give thanks unto you again for the beautiful rain that we've received as it replenishes our water supply. We thank you for all the good things we enjoy. We do pray for the council tonight, and we ask your blessing upon them as they make the appointments that need to be made, carry on the business for the community. And we pray that they might be blessed for the time that they spend and the labor that they give to our community. This we ask in our Father's name. Amen.
Well, you know the drill. So we get to hear about what's going on with Post 136.
I'll be more than happy.
Great.
Not everything, though. We reached our goal this year of 290 members, and this hasn't happened in a long time. Our membership is starting to come back. In the district, we'll have over 6,000 members, and that includes men and women, young and old, all the way from Paso Robles to the Ojai, Ventura, Fillmore, Santa Paula posts. Legion also has a website. I don't know their website right now, but you can look it up, and there's lots of information you can get off of your computers and websites now about the Legion all over the United States, and there's also Legion organizations in Canada, France. Our donations last year of 250 posts reporting reached over $1.5 million to children and youth and to the state. In our local Legion post, we reached up to around $6,500 to this local community. And this was earned through our bingo and some of our lobster feeds and when leftover money from fireworks from a few years back. May 30th is Memorial Day, so please put that down on your calendar, council members. We'd like to see all of you there. It'll be held at the Rio Grande District Cemetery. Post 136 is the host this year, and afterwards we will have a little reception also at our Legion Hall. We are also assisted in that with the VFW post from Napomo and the VFW post from the Five Cities area. First Fridays of the month, around 5:30, we have our fish fry, and the public is welcome. Third Sundays, the Women Auxiliary has their breakfast. The public is invited. Presently, our...
And that takes us to item 5, special presentations. We have none this evening. Item 6 is agenda review. Move that all resolutions and ordinances presented tonight be read in title only, and all further readings be waived.
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? That motion carries. It takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward and make a comment on items that are not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters that are not published on the agenda. We would ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes or less, and please address the council as a whole. Anyone who would like to come forward? No one? Okay. We'll close community comments and suggestions. That takes us to item 8, consent agenda. This is a group of items that the council has had an opportunity to review in detail, and we normally approve the consent agenda in one action. Unless there is an item on consent that a member of council would like to pull for further clarification or discussion, what is the will of the council?
Ms. Mayor, I'd like to pull item 8H.
Okay. We have a request to pull 8H. And I'd just like to make a comment on 8D. And with that, I will entertain a motion to approve items 8A through 8L.
M.
And turn the page here. 8M, with the exception of 8D and 8H.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Scanning through, I don't see anything, Tim.
No, ma'am, for none tonight.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion, further discussion? Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Just a quick, you don't have to come all the way up here, but I just wanted to publicly acknowledge what you've done with 8D, Angela. This is exactly what I was looking for, to expand our investment options and our policy. It's a great job, and I really do appreciate it. I think we're gonna benefit immensely from some of the strategies that you've put in there. So very much pleased with the final result on that, and with that, I'll entertain a motion to approve 8D.
So moved.
Okay. Can I just one echo that, and we also, and I, this is in a report later that we'll touch on, but we also wanted to recognize Mayor Farrar, who really came up with this idea and asked us to investigate it, and certainly a lot of the credit should be attributed to you. So.
We just make suggestions. You guys do all the work, so it's very much appreciated.
It's a good suggestion.
So I just wanted to mention that, Angela. We have a motion and a second. Roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes, thank you. And now we have 8H, Mayor Pro Tem.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't want to discuss this or debate at all. I just wanted to take the opportunity. My appointee, Matthew Brownlee, for the Traffic Commission, is with us tonight, and I wanted to thank and acknowledge his willingness to serve and his willingness to put in the time for the community, and publicly acknowledge it and thank him before we voted on it. So thank you for your willingness to help out, and we look forward to your service.
We'll make sure you get steady raises along the way for We have a few other commissioners that are laughing at that. I can't imagine why. Okay. With that, I'm assuming that...
I would move that we approve item 8H.
Okay.
I'll second that.
There is a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. That takes us to item 9, public hearing, our first public hearing, actually our only public hearing this evening, consideration of final approval of our community development block grant projects.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. We're going to get the PowerPoint turned on right here. This item is for final approval of community development block grants projects for 2005. As you know, which brings the total amount of the city's funds to $120,586. This left staff in the position of allocating this reduction amongst the recommended funding projects. Staff so far has suggested reducing public services, each public service grant, by $132. It recommends for public facility category reducing ADA upgrades to city parks by $2,885 and no reduction for the EOC healthcare clinic remodel. For the category of area benefit, staff suggests a code enforcement reduction of $1,689 and no reduction to facade grants. And administration was reduced by $1,408. And the only thing that staff did on administration is to divide the funds into administration and capacity building. And this leaves staff a little flexibility in how that money is funded or is spent, and that may be used for low-income housing projects throughout the city. On the screen is a table that is also included in your staff report, and it shows your recommendations under prior proposed and then staff's recommendation that make up for that $7,038. Of course, the final allocation of funds is up to the City Council, and staff is ready to make any changes or notations as directed. With that, staff recommends that the City Council adopt a resolution approving the Community Development Block Grant projects for 2005, and I can answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions, clarifications? Okay. We've seen this before, and I see what you've done here, and it seems equitable. This is a public hearing. If there are any members of the audience would like to come forward and briefly comment on this item, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. No one? Okay. We'll close the public hearing portion of 9A and bring this back. Councilmember Dickens, why don't you start us off here?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Like you said earlier, I think this is we've seen this before, and this is an annual event that we have the opportunity to distribute these dollars, that these federal dollars that come to the city in as equitable as way as possible based on the request that we receive. And I believe the staff has done a fine job in trying to balance the needs out there with the limited amount of resources. So I don't have any suggestions as to how to better do this. I think this is probably as equitable as it can be. And I think that certainly with all the deserving programs that we've outlined here, this will certainly be a help. So I have no problems with moving forward with this proposal as presented.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, we have already looked at this once, and I don't have any additional comments on this point and can support it as it's presented.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Jim, for your efforts in putting all this together. I only wish that there could be more that could be allocated out, but I think you've done a good job in eating the shortage and distributing it in a fair and equitable manner. So I have no problem supporting this as you proposed it. So thank you again.
I have nothing else to add other than the fact that I'm hopeful that this year, I remember the situation last year, we were a little bit delayed in getting the money out. So perhaps this year we can, particularly with Harvest Bag, we can get those checks out there. And aside from that, I just, Jim, I want to thank you and Community Development, whoever works on this, for continuing to streamline this process. You've made this very, very less, I guess it was less, much less arduous than it used to be. And it goes quickly, and you do a good job with it. So I have no issue as well, and I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move for approval of a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande determining those projects to be funded with the city's allocation of the program year 2005 Community Development Block Grant CDBG funds.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes, thank you. That will take us to continued business. Item 10, we have none this evening. New business, we have one item, 11A, consideration of proposed budget strategies for fiscal year 2005-2006 and fiscal year 06-07.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. The object of this evening is really just trying to see if we can minimize the need and number for changes later on in the process. Now, the primary goal established at that time was simply to maintain existing service levels given a number of impacts on the city's revenues this upcoming year. And the most significant included, first of all, about $244,000 the state will be taking away from the city in the upcoming budget year, further increases in the PERS retirement rates. Due to some state regulations and inability to continue to utilize state COPS fundings for the expenditures we had traditionally been using them for, and therefore forcing the general fund to have to assume those costs. And then lastly, the impact of increased fuel costs on a number of the department's operating budgets. Once again this year, the expenditures that will be recommended by staff will be determined later on in the budget process. At this point, staff is confident that the measures proposed will be sufficient to provide for a recommended balanced budget. The approach used again this year is to place the highest priority on trying to find ways to reduce costs, but at the same time, have the least impact on our service levels. There are actually easier ways to balance the budget, but we believe the city's mission focuses around providing services to the community, and therefore, if we are serious or we are committed to that mission, then this really needs to be our priority in establishing these type of measures. And I'm very proud of the staff's ability to step up again this year and meet this challenge, which includes the following recommendations. First of all is elimination of a part-time fleet maintenance worker position. Currently, the city farms out the majority of its vehicle repairs, which a recent study confirmed is currently the most cost-effective option of providing that function for the city. However, to do that, the city has traditionally assigned two employees to provide that service. One employee is needed to pick up the employee dropping the vehicle off, and we believe that we can eliminate one part-time position by having the departments assign vehicles or utilizing other public work staff to assist in transporting those vehicles when necessary. Secondly, it is proposed to modify the entrance to the City Hall office area to provide for one common shared public counter between the City Manager's office and the Financial Services Department. And by doing that, we can transfer the receptionist responsibilities in the City Manager's office to the Financial Services Department utility billing clerk. As a result, staff recommends that the office assistant one position in the city manager's office be eliminated and replaced with a part-time office assistant two position that would be dedicated to assist the city clerk, the human resources manager, and the city manager's executive assistant with needed tasks. So by doing that, we believe that we can improve customer service, address some existing workload issues, and at the same time, reduce costs. Next, in preparing their budgets, departments have been directed to submit office and supplies accounts with a 2% decrease for fiscal year 05 and 06, which is the maximum amount determined to be feasible in order to continue to maintain our existing service levels. And while the directors have agreed that they can make this work, I do want to communicate that this is becoming more and more challenging given the decreases and minimal increases that they've received in those accounts over the past few years. So I believe we can make it work this year, but I think we're going to have to accept the fact in some of the upcoming years we'll need to incorporate some reasonable increases to some of those accounts. Next, the programs established to create affordable housing units in the city have resulted in a substantial amount of staff time dedicated by a number of individuals in the organization. And as a result, staff feels it would be appropriate to charge at least $20,000 in staff time to the Affordable Housing in Lieu Fee Fund and the Redevelopment Housing Set-Aside Fund for those expenditures. Next, as the mayor mentioned earlier in the meeting, the mayor had previously requested staff to research to determine if the city could obtain a better rate of return on its investments by looking at some options. I also wanted to emphasize on that any options that would be included would be investment options in the existing city's investment policy, and there would be no reduction in security of those different measures. Next, the city currently contracts with the County of San Luis Obispo for maintenance of the city's computer system, which has worked extremely well. The county assigns one employee on a full-time basis to the city, and then they have other specialized staff available as needed. We have, though, been paying a pretty high cost in overhead, and therefore we believe that if we were to transfer that employee in-house and then continue to contract with the county for those specialized services on a time and materials basis, it will result in some level of savings to us. And there's also benefit to the county because they will not have to worry about supervising an employee that they have very little contact with. And essentially, it'll work pretty much the same as the existing relationship. We'll just be able to generate some cost savings through that different structure. The city currently contracts with the Wallace Group for some of the functions required in managing the capital improvement program, and some of those include accounting-related functions. The Financial Services Department staff have proposed to assume those responsibilities, and we believe that will result in both cost savings as well as better coordination of the program. The police and fire departments have been doing a great job in increasing their cost recovery for their services. For example, they've been very aggressive in recouping costs from fraudulent calls they receive or different calls they receive where there's some dispute or responsibility clearly responsibility on the part of the people that caused the accident. So they're able to recoup some of their response costs in those cases. Anyways, staff feels comfortable that we can budget increased funds in revenues for these budgets this upcoming year based on a continued program on emphasizing those efforts. As I mentioned before, the workers' due to a very successful safety program as well as some other factors, the city continues to experience significant decreases in our accidents and our workers' compensation claims. In addition to that, the city attorney has done an outstanding job in managing the city's liability. And as a result, staff is projecting that the city will receive, once again next year, a very sizable reimbursement from our workers' compensation and liability programs. However, these are potentially one-time revenues, and therefore, traditionally, staff has recommended they be allocated to one-time expenditures, such as some of the computer upgrades that we have determined will likely be necessary this upcoming fiscal year. The next measure is really a measure from last year. It is the reorganization of the code enforcement program. However, that full-time position was funded through a portion of this fiscal year, and therefore we will continue to receive some savings from that measure in this upcoming fiscal year. And then lastly, first of all, I want to mention we're very proud to be able to say that almost all these measures are focused on cost-saving and cost-efficiency measures. The only one recommendation at increasing revenues is a proposal to increase miscellaneous fees by 5% above what the normal rate of increase would be. And these, once again, includes many of just our miscellaneous fees. It does not include development impact fees, which we recently completed an updated study to update those fees. Doesn't include fees like the building permit fees that are established by the Uniform Building Code. And it does not include some of the parks and recreation fees that are already established to accurately reflect the cost of performing specific programs. A cost recovery study was prepared for the city by DMG Maximus in March of 2000. And since then, fees have been increased annually based upon an inflationary formula that was put into place. However, staff recently completed a supplemental study to that original study and determined that the cost for those specific services have been increasing at a rate much above the rate of increase of those fees. When you look at revenues, we find some positive and negative trends. First of all, on the positive side, property tax is projected to continue to increase at a positive rate. The progress is being made on the city's hotel and motel attraction strategy, which will possibly bring in new transit occupancy tax revenues. The city's PERS retirement rates are projected to begin to level off in fiscal year 06-07 and begin decreasing after that. And redevelopment agency tax increment revenue is expected to become a viable funding tool for the city within the next few years. On the downside, sales tax growth has been slow. The last couple years, and we really don't have any major planned projects coming up in the foreseeable future that we believe would drastically change that. At the same time, demographic trends are leading towards an aging population, which tend to support lower retail sales more than young families. And on top of that, The potential retail growth in San Luis Obispo and Napomo also threaten some of the existing, or could threaten some of the city's existing retail base. Due to the rising cost of housing, personnel costs are projected to continue to increase at a rate higher than inflation. We mentioned property tax, and while it is projected to continue to increase at a positive rate, we also expect that rate of growth to be lower than it is today in the future. Lack of state and federal funding for major projects is likely to continue into the foreseeable future. And lastly, as the city approaches build-out, building permit fee revenue will probably begin to decrease. However, our real major concern is with regard to capital and infrastructure expenses that have been deferred. And we have been making some good progress in a number of these areas. However, there are a number of major needs on the horizon that will need to be dealt with at some point in time. And we'd like to briefly review those with you this evening. First of all, the city is gradually increasing funding allocated for the annual pavement management program, but it needs to be increased by another approximately $25,000 annually in order to properly fund that program. And in addition to that, we probably will need to begin budgeting about $200,000 annually for major street improvement projects that in the past the city has been successful in obtaining state and federal grants for. We do believe that we will begin to receive some Proposition 42 revenue through the state at some point in time, and that would help pay for a portion of these costs. The city also has some major transportation system needs that we also were confident would be primarily paid for through state and federal funding, most notably the Briscoe-Halcyon Interchange Project. However, as the mayor mentioned at the last meeting, that funding, due to the state financial crisis, could be delayed as much as 14 years. I'm pretty confident that we will all agree that that's not acceptable, and we're going to have to come up with strategies of how to move up that schedule. And I believe that a portion, a part of that strategy will need to be looking at how to fund a majority or a large portion of that project locally. I put in $300,000 here just as an estimate of the annual amount if we were to issue debt service to come up with a significant amount to pay for a major portion of that project. Next, the current funding plan for the City Hall project provides for beginning to budget about $210,000 annually for debt service payments in about 4 years. The plan also calls for earmarking a portion of TOT taxes from new hotels and motels for that funding. The main thing I would like to emphasize is these facilities are not ADA compliant yet. And so if we are unable to implement this funding plan, we will be forced to pursue some other upgrades to those facilities, and we've just been very reluctant to want to invest a lot of money in facilities that clearly aren't going to meet our long-term needs. So there are some timelines on that. The nation has some serious shortage needs. As a result, a plan has been in place for some time to add a second floor to that facility. At one time, we were supposed to receive a FEMA grant for the project. However, the Congress never appropriated the money for the program, and at this point it appears unlikely that that's going to happen. The city adopted a drainage master plan in 1999. However, none of the funding alternatives within the plan were implemented, and so now we are estimating the cost to implement that plan at about $200,000 to $250,000 annually. The city is preparing a drainage fee study, and we're hoping a portion of those costs would be covered through development impact fees. Personnel costs and benefits have fallen well below the county median, and it's estimated that to bring those up just to the countywide median level in comparing ourselves to other jurisdictions in the county will require an annual appropriation of about $250,000. As you know, we have a financial policy in place to establish a vehicle replacement fund, and the existing long-range financial plan includes a recommendation to begin budgeting $150,000 annually in order to build up a reserve fund sufficient to implement that program. And then lastly, the city will need to replace its fire ladder truck within the next few years. The new equipment cost is estimated to be about $750,000. Which would result in a cost of about $100,000 annually if we were to purchase it through a lease purchase agreement. So you can see all those items come up with a total cost of about $1.7 million annually. And they've pretty much been limited to the items that we feel are the critical needs for the city's future. However, that doesn't include funding for other goals that the council may want to come up with in the future and other potential things. But I also don't want to make it sound worse than it is, because as I went through those recommendations, I identified a number of strategies that we do have in place for a lot of those costs. So When you take that into account, that $1.7 million is inflated. But at the same time, I think what these numbers clearly show is that the city's revenue sources are not going to be sufficient to meet long-term what we really believe the minimal needs of the city are going to be in the future. As a result, as part of the long-range financial planning process, staff is recommending the City Council direct staff to come back with some options for new or increased revenues. And I added a few slides here just briefly that include information that the Council is well aware of, but I thought it would be beneficial for the public at this point. Because if we begin to talk about new revenues, I think it's very important to emphasize that this city's approach in dealing with our budget constraints has not taken the traditional or, stereotypical government approach of just dealing with cutting services or raising revenues. And our approach has been, is, and will continue to be focused on cost efficiency. And so in addition to the measures that we've reviewed for you this evening on the upcoming budget, I just wanted to briefly recap some of the things that we've accomplished over the last few years. These include restructuring the code enforcement program, which eliminated a full-time position, replaced it with a part-time position. We restructured the economic development program that eliminated two full-time positions. Coordination with the fire services, coordinating fire services with Grover Beach, which has resulted in utilizing those resources more efficiently. We began contracting for custodial services, which eliminated one full-time position. I mentioned briefly the safety program and how successful it is. It has been, along with changes in our insurance pool, and both of those have resulted in significant annual savings to our workers' comp and liability costs. We modified our Public Works corporate yard to allow the police department to fuel their vehicles there, and that reduced their ongoing fuel cost. We developed a franchise extension with Charter Communications in exchange to install a city fiber network, 6% of the loan, plus about $10,000 in a fee. The primary benefit is for cities that need the money right away, immediately. The primary benefit to a city like ours is that it eliminates the risk of the state not paying the funding to the city, and that is a significant benefit given the history of the state. The downside is, in our case, it would cost somewhere between $33,000 and $40,000 out of that money we would otherwise receive back. And given the number of cost-saving measures we've presented, we're a little reluctant to propose something that's going to reduce revenues. We've talked to a number of other cities. A number of cities are participating, but in those that we've talked to, the majority of the cities we've talked to have decided not to participate. The common argument that they seem to be making is that with this bond program, it's actually assisted. They feel there's enough bondholders out there that are going to put much more pressure on the state than the cities ever could, and will really require the state to make these payments. And it's also felt if the state's going to need to take more money from the cities, that they'll pay this back and figure out another way to, you know, take some other money. So obviously there's some skepticism there. But based on all that analysis, staff is recommending that the city not participate, but we do recognize that there's some risk in that recommendation. And lastly, I apologize for the length of the presentation, but it's all important things we wanted to present. Lastly, staff is recommending that the city adopt a new financial policy aimed at trying to stabilize our PERS retirement rate costs. And the way this would work is the staff would determine what the long-term average rate we pay in PERS retirement costs to PERS is. Then the policy would require the city to budget for the cost of that average rate at a minimum on an ongoing basis, ongoing annual basis. When actual rates began to drop and eventually drop below that average rate, we would continue to pay the cost of the average rate and would begin to build up a reserve. Then when rates started to increase again and increased above the average rate, the reserves would pay the difference between the average rate and the actual rate. And so ultimately, we would get to a point where we would be paying a consistent and paying and budgeting a consistent amount each year for our PERS program, and would help us to avoid some of the problems that we've got into with PERS the last few years. And I think since we believe that those rates are very close to the top at this point, would be a perfect time to establish this type of policy. So that's the end of my presentation. I would be happy to answer any questions that you have. Our Director of Financial Services is also here to answer any questions that you have, and we'd respectfully recommend that you approve the miscellaneous proposals that we've presented to you this evening.
Quick question, Steve, before I forget on that last point, the PERS issue. Would that mean setting up a new category fund for PERS, or do we have something existing where that reserve could build up and kind of self-maintain?
Yeah, we would set up a new fund. We don't currently have, right now it's all in a certain PERS account in salaries, so we would separate it out.
Okay. Any other, any questions on the, who would like to go first?
Just real quick on the workers' comp, just so I understand how it works. Your workers' comp rate is set and you get a refund based on your success rather than a reduced rate in the future, which is the way that I'm going to say works on my end.
Yeah, we actually are in between two programs. They work a little bit differently. Under the old program, we just paid quarterly, and then, at the end of the year, based our experiences, we had a balance and we could either leave some in or we could take out some of that balance. The current program, see if I remember this correctly, it's a little more complicated. They do a whole analysis, and it's a pretty complicated formula how they determine your rates at the beginning of the year, and then you pay your deposit based on that, and then at the end of the year they go through another analysis, and that determines what refund you'll get back from this year. At the same time, it determines your rate for the upcoming year, and they have some terms for that, and I don't recall them off the top of my head. So one is both our rates have been our rates have primarily been lower, not only our history, but by going to these other pools that lowered our rate.
Congratulations on that to your safety committee. That was really pretty phenomenal. Yeah. So there is some savings going forward, as well as the refund. And that's something that just figures into the budget later on. I'm going to guess that's a relatively, in my company, that was a relatively big number, because we get all the money going forward, none of the money going back. But okay,
yeah, you both get a refund, and then the rates, because of that refund and low experience, the rates would also be less the following year. So it's a double benefit.
The other question: what would the cost of another Maximus study be? And the where I'm going with this is it, you know, there's two things in play. One is that certainly if we're spending more money providing these services than we're collecting, that's a concern. But there's also that 2 years from now when we do the study, we're going to be either looking at some really big jump or permanently building in an underfunded fee. And so I wonder, what would the cost of actually doing the Maximus fee this year be? I mean, study.
I haven't found out. I would guess around $20,000 for those type of fees. So I was concerned with some of the miscellaneous fees we're looking at. I'm afraid the revenue generated is going to be about $20,000. If we do a study now, it's probably just going to eat up our savings. But I think it would justify in the future a larger study, probably in the second year of the budget. And when they look at everything more comprehensively than we've looked at, then they might come up with some recommendations that did result in drastic fee changes. And that's pretty much, I think, what occurred when they did their last study. It was a pretty significant jump.
And The last one had to do with the housing, staff time spent on housing projects. Looking at past projects, for instance, the Big Cortland Senior, which was an actual project that came to fruition, was any staff time ever charged off to that at that point? I mean, significant amount of staff time was spent, but when they actually result in a deal, have we collected in the past, or is this?
I don't think we did at that time. I know we had the consultants were all charged off that project. Most of the consultant work was actually charged to the applicant themselves. At that time, we were just starting out, and we were really trying to maximize the funding assistance that could be available, and that was fairly new to us. So I don't think we charged staff time at that. Since then, we have been charging a little bit of staff time working on the housing element and those type of tasks to the block grant funds. I think you heard Jim mention that there's a little bit of block grant funds that has a little flexibility dealing with staff costs that relate to the affordable housing program and the housing element. So we've done a little bit of that.
And just related to that, the $20,000 is kind of like a flat fee, or is that $20,000 potential that we're going to charge back? Are we actually going to track this time, or is it just a one-time, we think it's about this, and that's what we're going to charge?
We'll probably sit down and discuss that. I think if we can clearly justify the amount by kind of analyzing what the time is, then we would just charge it as an amount. If it's close, we probably would need to charge exact time. Some of it will be exact time. We're charging, the city attorney obviously provides us exact time on his expenditures, and that's one of the most just recent things we've talked about is the extreme impact on some of his work. Putting these agreements together and changing these agreements, and every time a lender or a buyer has a problem, we have to go back to Tim, and he has to modify the agreements, and it's pretty, it's been quite an impact. One of the things we're talking about doing is we're going out on RFP to potentially hire a new redevelopment agency attorney, and those folks usually have expertise also in affordable housing deals, so we may want to see if we can use that attorney to do some supplemental work for us, specializing in that area, and Tim has been very supportive of that, getting somebody with the specialization in that particular line of work.
All right, thank you.
Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had a question regarding the increased miscellaneous fees by 5% at the cost recovery, as Councilmember Guthrie had mentioned. Steve, can we justify that type of an increase as the way it's been set up with just a supplemental? Because isn't that tied to some pretty specific laws as to making sure that we can only recover those costs that are tied to specific fees, and that's what prompts us to actually do the study to begin with. And my question is can we justify it, I guess?
That's a very good question. That's something we're struggling with trying to get some comfort level between the city attorney and myself. I believe that, one, it is a supplemental study, so we're really utilizable
study that you're talking about and that I'm concerned about that would sort of underlie that data. I think we have enough there to justify the 5% increase. But certainly going forward, we'll have to do a little more work and perhaps retain a consultant to really quantify this in a way that the public can really see it and untangle it and understand it. But I think the 5% is a very – you're looking at more like a 20 to 30% increase, and we're really going at the very low end of that increase with the information we have in hand.
And if I recall correctly, I think in the last several years we've actually it's based on – I believe some engineers report annual increase, and it's somewhere right around 2.5-3% has been the typical increase. Is that correct?
I think last year it was 1.8%. It's based on the consumer price index.
Thank you. Okay. I want to go back to the PERS retirement rate increases, and just I kind of want to get a picture of in the last several years. I know that we've seen some significant increases, but do you have off the top of your heads what we've been seeing the last several years as far as increases to our PERS retirement rates?
Miscellaneous is one that has increased significantly and is projected believe it's at 27% this year and is going to be 33% next year. So, and then it'll level off in 06-07 and again be predicted to be 33%. So, and then fire will also go up because of the MOU. We're changing their PERS rate. So,
and those are that's compounded annually then? I mean, okay, so 27, close to 27%, and then 33% on top of that the following year?
The city manager is saying it's 40. I'm using the employer rate, but when you add an employer rate that we're picking up also, it's...
Okay.
It's interesting when you might be interested at some point there. When you take a look at some of the comparisons of rates with our neighboring cities, which the majority of which have approved the new retirement plans with benefits above what we're offering, and they're still at lower rates. And so one of our issues, which is a good thing, we have a very stable long-term workforce with older employees nearing retirement, and that really results in a high rate for us, in addition to the other PERS things that have been going on with them, losing their investments and having to increase rates rapidly in order to recoup their investment. But some of the comparisons with other cities is interesting.
And that's directly related to the longevity of many of our employees. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Steve, can you give me a little more detail on page 5 when you talk about the cost recovery for public services, both police and fire? Can you give me an example of how the police and fire go about cost recovery on? And I'm assuming you're referring to specific calls that they respond to that are definitely not necessarily. I'm assuming not accidents that they feel like they can recover from the parties that caused the problems to begin with. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I wish Terry was here. He could give you a lot more details. I only have a few kind of detailed examples, but you know, one are just general calls that involve some kind of fraudulent call. We've had calls, I know, where kids have been clearly we were able to show there was some not just fraudulent call, but there was some criminal behavior on kids out doing something that involved starting a fire or something like that. We follow up on those, and basically any response time and damage and time on the police fire department is charged to the parents of that incident. If it's, you know, and these are in very clear-cut cases. Same with other some of the response calls, I think, on responding to medical emergencies, to accidents. If some of these accidents are clearly caused by some negligent act, we have some ability to go through their insurance and get some refunds through their insurance for that response. The big one, and the other one is a little less able to track, is that the fire department, and particularly in the police department, also has participated in mutual task force. The fire department has sent a lot of strike teams out of the area. They get that reimbursed fully from the state, so that's a pretty big ticket item. So just looking at the different revenue we've been getting in and how they've successfully been increasing that, we felt we could increase the budget of revenue this upcoming year. If they're going to continue to increase that effort, we're confident that we'll continue to, not as much as they,
okay,
the police chief and the fire chief,
and
put something together. Would you like me to just kind of put a follow-up report together and send it to you versus putting it on the agenda again?
And last, Steve, you were looking for, I believe, just some direction, I believe, in several different areas. I believe I've got some of them here. But in regards to the VLF participation, just my recommendation is that the buyback program doesn't look like it's going to be of benefit to us. And I guess we'll throw our dice with the state in a couple years from now, however that works. And then in regards to the financial policy on funding PERS costs. I think that's a really good strategy. I'm certainly going to need to see what those numbers look like. I'm hopeful that we're at the peak and that we're I can't imagine those costs continuing to go up like that and skyrocketing. But I think it's just prudent planning when we talk about doing kind of trying to level that out and planning in the future and setting up the reserve. So I'd certainly like to see that. And I believe the other recommendation you made was to look at bringing back the possibility of a list of potential other funding sources that we should look at as a council. I think that's certainly worth looking at and seeing what the possibilities might be to help at least address many of the current concerns that you've laid out in with some of the areas that we're going to need to address in a long-term type of approach. So I think that covers all the ones you were talking about.
Okay. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
I don't have any questions. Are you ready for comments at this point?
I'm going to ask the public if there are any comments on this item. It's not a public hearing, but we typically allow public input. Anyone like to come forward and comment on this item?
Susan Flores, 529 East Branch. It's quite complicated. I've been trying to concentrate. But in going to council meeting and planning meetings, I'm curious if we haven't been allowed to let more business come in because of traffic issues, say, for instance, Wells Fargo or something like that. That doesn't give us a lot of revenues. We didn't allow Walmart to expand, and yet we've generated a lot of revenues. And I'm just curious, without coming to any conclusions, are we in a catch-22? If we would allow more business in here and maybe overlook a little bit of the traffic or some of the smaller issues, would that generate us the revenues that would help fit this budget better? It's just an observation. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else? Okay. We'll close public input on this item and bring this back for final comments of the council. Councilmember Dickens?
Oh, I think, I'm sorry, I kind of jumped ahead. I was actually kind of making some of my comments prior to, and I forgot we hadn't gotten a public comment.
That mean you're all done?
Yes. That means that I think that Steve had, was there one other area that you wanted some feedback in regards to council direction?
Yeah, one is specifically we wanted to get council direction on approving the budget strategies as proposed. And then two, at one point in the presentation, we mentioned adding a budget goal for increasing ADA improvements. We mentioned that's something we've already kind of worked on a strategy and believe we can accomplish at least in this upcoming budget. So it might be good to get formal council direction to add that as official budget goal to add to our other list.
Just to add my 2 cents on those two items, I think those are appropriate for the staff to bring forth, both the budget strategies as presented and the ADA goals. So I think that concludes my comments.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, on the one specific issue on the VLF, I just did quick calculation. I see this is about 11% over 2 years, which is really only 5 or 6% a year. I mean, if we just put it in the bank at the 3% we're collecting, it's really only going to cost us about $15,000 to have it today, and take no risk at all. So, I'm not particularly adamant about, but I actually think that's a pretty good risk there. That in fact we would collect the money today, even if we just filed it away in a fund, to guarantee that. That one, we get it, and two, that it doesn't just get delayed. I mean, I wouldn't be totally surprised if this one of the ways the state finds to accomplish this is that they say, well, you know, you're going to get it in two more years. So I actually think that's probably a pretty good arbitrage. I realize that for the small amount we're talking about is the upfront fee, the $10,000 that they cost if it was $1 million or...
Should definitely be pursued. I would... very strongly recommend that we look at some different sources of revenues and come up with some strategies. I'm not sure on the VLF gap loan program. I think we should look very carefully at the exact costs on that. I haven't got my calculator out to figure out what it would be on an annual basis. But I am also somewhat skeptical about the state coming through and providing the dollars when they said they would. So I would look at get some real exact estimates of what this is going to cost us and see what the rates might be. The ADA compliance, I think that's sound, and we should go forward with that. As we've seen in the commercial community, failure to do so, ultimately, you're just biding your time till someone comes in and slaps a lawsuit on you. So I think we should be quite perseverant in going forward and correcting and complying with ADA requirements wherever possible. So we should budge that and make that a goal. Cost recovery for public safety, I think it's a good idea. However, I want to make sure that we don't initiate a policy that makes anyone reluctant to call for assistance when they need it. So let's be very, very careful about that and very clear on the instances when that is going to be employed. I don't want someone trying to decide whether they should call the fire department or not. They're going to get billed. So let's be very careful on that one. I'd like to see the suggestions you come back with as staff comes back with in terms of what some future revenue sources might be, and I welcome it. Look forward to that. In terms of the question as to we've turned down some projects that may have brought in some additional revenues because of some already bad traffic situations, I think we have to be very careful and balance the potential for incremental gains in sales tax versus the increased strain on public services. There is a cost to providing public services. Our systems are strained to the maximum now in some cases, and I don't think you can just compromise those just for the potential for additional growth, particularly if the growth doesn't produce any sales tax revenues. I'm looking forward to going forward with our strategy to try to bring in some additional bed tax dollars in terms of transit occupancy tax, and I look forward to that being successful. So in general, I like what I see. One thing I would be a little bit skeptical is let's look very carefully at what the state has or does not have in store for us, and keep that in the back of our mind in whatever strategies we develop. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll add my comments to some of the areas that you were looking for feedback on, Steve. First of all, the ADA strategy. I agree with the statements that have been made. I think we need to demonstrate a proactive policy and moving forward. So I think what you have in place is a good start at that. Based on from what I've heard and the information that you've presented tonight, I would not support moving forward with a VLF gap loan program. I don't think we're quite as needy, I guess, it would be a term that I would use, as some of the other cities that find themselves in a position where they must participate in some form of a gap loan program in order to provide just the barest of services, and I don't think we're there yet. And one of the reasons why we're not there yet is because of the fact that this city, at least, has anticipated for quite some time the situation that we're now in, and as a result of that, you've come up with a strategy that I'll term as sort of a Prop 1A gap strategy, which we're hearing about tonight. And so I'm looking at what we have in the next proposed for the next 2 years as that type of a program. It's going to make the best of a bad situation, and I think that what we do have in place and what is recommended, we're going to be better off than a lot of other cities who perhaps did not see this coming to the degree that we did. As far as any kind of a long-range financial study, Councilmember Guthrie mentioned that. I think for the reasons that I've indicated, the fact that there is a degree of instability, we don't, you know, we just don't know whether the state is going to be true to their word. If we go by history, I think overall the policy that we have in place is again the best it can be given the situation. And again, I want to commend both of you for the strategy that that you've recommended here. I know, you know, we're having to tighten our belt a little bit, and in some instances, it's going to be a bit painful. But the fact that you've balanced that without sacrificing customer service and services, I'm very happy with what I see here, and I think when it comes back to us, it will serve us well at least through the next 2 years, and perhaps, you know, there'll be better times ahead. I do agree with the strategy of looking at alternative funding for our transportation needs. That's a must, because clearly state and federal funding is not going to be restored anytime soon, particularly for our large capital improvement programs related to transportation. And we've got a couple here that are getting in the way of meeting our needs now and into the future in terms of the growth that we have planned within the framework of the general plan. So those are my comments. Any other questions, comments? If not, I will entertain a motion.
I did want to recognize Angela for the great job that she did, not only in helping me put this together, but if you look at a number of the recommendations, they involve either items that her department or her department staff came up with, or her department and department staff are going to be responsible for making sure they're successful. So they really stepped up this year. So I wanted to recognize her and her staff.
Yeah, you came in here and hit the ground running. That's great. Okay, with that, we will entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we move that we approve the proposed budget strategies for fiscal years 2005-2006 and 2006-2007, and direct staff to provide information on the alternatives for new or increased long-term revenue sources.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes, thank you. That takes us to item 12, City Council Reports. I'm first on the list. We have not had a SLOCOG meeting since my last report, but we did have a SLOCOG executive meeting. And something came out of that one that I wanted to share with you, Steve. Maybe you can pass it on to Don. According to Rhonda Carley from SLOCOG, there is some limited categorical transportation money that's available. I think some of the TE money, the enhancement money, is available specifically for things like crosswalks. And so I know that we're looking at two potential crosswalks. I have gotten in the village, I have gotten other calls on perhaps taking another look at crosswalks up on James Way near Rancho Grande Park. So that might be another one, but there is some money available, I think, in two categories. One was traffic or enhancement. The other, I'm trying to think what the other one was, but I know that SLOCOG is going to go out with a request for projects. So we want to make sure we're in the queue. And they might be, you know, small kinds of things, but at least it could be some funding.
Projects like that delayed over quite a bit of time, so that would be helpful. And we are beginning to meet pretty closely with Ron and trying to determine some of these other strategies. We've already come up with some ideas. And when we come forward with the capital improvement program, I think at that time we'll present some specific strategies on Briscoe, Halcyon, and how we can address the schedule issues. least a strategy of trying to move it up.
Okay. The South County Sanitation District, I've been to the last two meetings. Last meeting, we did have a public hearing on the issue with Zone 1-1A, the creek. Some interesting things came out of that session. I think probably the most important issue surfaced as a result of our legal position, which the board had requested that our counsel obtain, and that legal opinion was shared. And I guess to quickly summarize, in the opinion of the of our counsel, based on that opinion, due to some of the systems that were down for repair, and then we had some volume increases with the rains, but we're starting to stabilize and get things back under control, and we know we'll be back. I think there was one category that we exceeded the maximum, but we're verging back down towards where we should be. That concludes my report. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Zone 3 Water Advisory Board, we met last Thursday, the 17th, and the largest issue facing us is the non-approval of the Habitat Conservation Plan for Lopez and the release of water to continually keep the habitat for the fish more than anything else. At this point, NOAA will not act on the proposed HCP. They radically disagree with the experts' advised numbers on what's required for a release. We're currently releasing about 5 million gallons a day just for the enhancement. So this is something we'd like to see clarified fairly soon. And staff will be coming back to us by the next meeting with a plan for how we might go about doing that. The Air Pollution Control District has not met for 2 months. They do meet tomorrow for a bi-monthly meeting. Not a whole lot on the agenda at this point. Most significantly, they're on track for both the revenues that have been generated as well as for the expenses that have been used so far this year. There is a measure on the agenda to clarify some of the rules, and that will be taking some of our time tomorrow. Unfortunately, the RAC, the Water Resource Advisory Committee meeting, I missed that last time Councilman Arnold attended. I was looking for him to give us a report tonight, but obviously that won't be happening. And the Fire Oversight Committee that we have with Grover Beach will not meet again until April 15th, Friday, April 15th, the day that everyone's taxes are due. I'll remind you to take care of that. And that's pretty much all I have tonight.
Good. Thank you. Councilmember Dickens?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mine will be real short. The SCAT, South County Area Transit, hasn't met since my last report, and the South County Youth Coalition doesn't meet till this Thursday, so I have no report there. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie?
Yeah, there was a EVC meeting since my last report. There's not a lot to report there. They are at this point without, I think they actually call it the president or executive director. They're kind of caught between a couple of candidates that didn't work out and continuing to move forward. But at this point, there is no executive director. But they do still have their staff functions in place for the loan programs and all that they have going forward. So that is my report. They meet on the 30th again as well.
Thank you. We'll catch up to Councilmember Arnold next time around. That takes us to 13 Councilmember items.
Can I add one, Mr. Mayor, real quick?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I think it belongs here better than the council communications. It's my understanding, and Steve, if you don't mind, with the council's indulgence, to I believe that the Busick County track that's on our border has recently released, and I'm not sure if it's the draft EIR or the supplemental to the draft EIR, But if we could do a follow-up, I know we've been following that particular development and how it relates to potential circulation on the backside of the high school and so forth. If we could just look into that, see where that's if that's at, and if it's in the phase of having any comments, if that could be either done at the staff level. I think staff knows where we stand on that particular issue, unless it needs to come back to council.
You bet. We have been communicating through email with county representatives. We had an update just a couple days ago that it was about to be released, and so I'd go back and get the latest. But as soon as we get that, I assume you'd all like copies then submitted to you, and then we'll prepare an analysis.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great minds think alike. I asked at the last got the response from Steve on that one.
Check with me yesterday.
City manager items?
None, sir.
Okay. Council communication, correspondence, comments. I did have one quick comment. We had a meeting of I think three of the mayors and city managers. David Edge was there from the county, and Shirley Bianchi is the chair of the Board of Supervisors. And we had a luncheon meeting to discuss the potential for looking at a countywide sales tax increase to supplement local projects. And specific staff communication, Steve?
None tonight, sir.
Okay, that takes us to item 17, community comments and suggestions. Mr. Ross? No one? Okay. Close that. Takes us to item 18, motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We leave these here and they stay.
That's right.